everyone, and welcome to the first episode of a show I'm dubbing TV Talks. That's right, I made up this brand, TV Talks. It's not going to last. I'm sure Frank's going to hear it, and he's going to hate it.
Yeah, if it fails, you can blame it all on James.
So I'm here, I'm James, and I'm in studio with...
Jordy.
And...
Michelle.
And we're going to talk about something we actually haven't talked about on the network before. I don't know if it's because it's too nerdy or just because our network kind of moved away from anime when Al stopped watching anime. But a show that the three of us have been watching called Ruby. And I don't know if we want to give a little background on what Ruby is. Because it's not, you know, when you think of like anime, you think of like just a Japanese animated cartoon. And Ruby is...
Well,
different.
There's a whole argument of whether Ruby's actually considered anime.
Yeah, and the great thing about that argument is that Japan considers it anime. So, I mean,
But some weeby Americans are like, it's not anime! The art's different!
Yeah, I mean, it definitely comes down to a contentious topic. Yeah. So, I have been watching anime since I was 4. And even if you don't consider Ruby an anime, it has a lot of tropes that anime has. Starting off, the entire adventure is about a girl named Ruby who has mysterious silver eyes and starts the adventure by stopping some bad guy from doing some bad guy stuff. And this gets her inducted into a fabulous, super covert university known as Beacon Academy. And when she starts there, she's actually starting 2 years before everyone else because she's special. She's very special. And that is the initial premise of the show, that this girl is going off to train to fight monsters, and she's special, and she's got mysterious eyes.
So to add a little more background, for those of you who don't know Ruby, it's, I guess, an internet show that was developed by the company Rooster Teeth, who some of you may remember from Red vs. Blue, the cartoons made out of originally Halo. But I think they ended up switching to animating it all in-house. And by a guy by the name of Monty Ohm.
Monty Ohm was the
series creator. And yeah, he came up with this very anime style pitch that looks very much like anime, feels very much like anime. You know, when I'm watching it, I think of it certainly as an anime.
So I don't know if either of you have ever heard of Dead Fantasy. Okay, no. So Monty Ohm actually became internet famous long ago, in the days before even YouTube was big, for a series known as Dead Fantasy, where he took models that he made and had Dead or Alive and Final Fantasy characters fight each other in very characteristically Monty Ohm fights. And that's what started Ruby, was this guy who was just beloved on the internet for these like really detailed, over-the-top fight scenes, created this show that was basically, he wanted to be able to have people who could fight and shoot each other and cut each other without killing each other so that they could have really intense fight scenes. And if you watch the series from season 1 to 3, which is while Monty Ohm, who unfortunately passed away, was alive, you can see that breadth of engaging, interesting fight scenes that pretty much exists nowhere else but Ruby and is widely considered to be why it's so popular.
And I feel like the concept of like punching and kicking and hurting people a bunch without like actually like killing them, I feel like that's also a very anime thing.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Dragon Ball Z obviously comes to mind. I mean, how many episodes can we see two people punch each other constantly and still be like, yeah, this is fun? Now, how did everybody start watching Ruby? Because I know I certainly wasn't, you know, started way back in the day. This is definitely a more recent obsession.
Yeah, when was it first? When did it first come out? I don't even know. Because I think I only started watching it like maybe a little over a year ago. So, and I was just, my friend recommended it to me because he's like, oh, like you like magical girl crap. Like, you'll probably like this.
So Ruby started in 2013 was the original release.
So it was about like 3.5 years late to the game.
Yeah. So Michelle, I like you also started watching it about a year and a half ago.
Over a year, yeah.
With a friend of mine, and I'll be 100% honest. I had gotten the like intro DVD from a friend for like a Christmas gift.
You had
like,
the DVD?
Yeah, and he was like, I think you'll like this, and I put it on a shelf, and then I saw that it was on Crunchyroll.
That's where I watched it.
And I was like, you know what, I'll try this. I had a friend over, and we just kind of put it on in the background while we were doing other stuff. You know, and was a fun background show. I really liked the idea of something very homegrown like that, right? Like this was something that, you know, a small group of people started and started to animate and make. And that was really cool to me. But I'm going to be 100% honest. Season one and two, it was a background show, right? Yes. It was something I kind of kept on into the background. You know, and I would watch it while kind of doing work or doing some other things, you know, at night. You know, the episodes aren't very long.
They're like 7 to 14 minutes long.
Yeah, anything from like... So,
and then there was, there's like, sometimes they would have those like little clip ones in between stuff that would be like 3 minutes and it'd be like background of the kingdoms.
Yeah, in the beginning it was like minute. Now I think the longest episodes are like 25 to 30 minutes,
yes.
But even the standard episode generally falls on like the 14 to 17 minute
range.
And
even if it is, like, I think the last episode they just had, it was about like 26 minutes. And I was like, crap, I'm going to watch this during lunch. And I got my phone at my desk and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to make it. But the first 2 minutes and last 2 minutes of each one is like the intro song where it's like, for like
very
90
much
seconds.
Anime. It's very much an anime thing.
But that all changed for me, right? Season three.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but so season three is kind of like, so I guess if you think of television series, they all kind of have that big moment.
The like, pivotal change.
Yeah, particularly anime, right? Mm-hmm. They have this moment where, you know, like everything gets real. You know, some series that happens really early on, and I think some series it happens later on, right? And this series went from kind of like... the magical schoolgirl concept you're talking about, Jordy, to something much bigger.
Oh, yes. Yeah, because the first two seasons are all them in school doing school stuff, being, you know, very...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then season three is their tournament arc that explodes.
Also very anime.
Yes.
So, and then season four is... Rogue Adventure.
We're sad.
So sad. I don't think we should be worried to talk about spoilers because we're going to go, when we talk about season six, I'm assuming we're going to go into detail with all the characters. So I'm going to say for me, it's obviously in the end of season three, the death of Pyrrha, one of the very beloved characters at the hands of Cinder, and then kind of the destruction of Beacon with Ruby's power of the Silver Eyes. And, you know, I mentioned that only now because it'll be relevant to when we're talking about season six. You know, in a lot of ways because they've gotten away from that.
Yeah. For me, I actually had started watching Ruby. I didn't start watching it at the beginning, but I started really getting into it about 3.5 years ago. So a bunch of my school friends, I had just moved to a new school, and all my friends were talking about this, you know, this show called Ruby, and I'd seen some of it on Netflix, and I was like, it kind of seems dopey. The action is okay, but, like, it seems really strange to me. What I didn't anticipate was my obsession. So my friends say, oh, yeah, did you see the newest episode of season three? It's the finale, and something crazy happened. So, of course, I didn't want to not fit in, so I skipped everything from season one and two and watched the season finale of season three and was like, oh, that's dead the Pyrrha, and she was my favorite character, so I was like, how am I supposed to relate to anybody now? And then I started watching season four, and if you don't watch season one and two, you don't fall in love with Ruby quite the same, and I mean the actual character Ruby. So
you probably were like, this girl's so annoying.
My husband literally made jokes about her all the time. And this at the same time, I moved in with my friend Will, who has been obsessed with Ruby since it aired. And like, I was like, yeah, I've definitely seen season one and two of Ruby, which is only true now in the last year or so. And I'm like, wow, I've been giving Ruby a hard time for this last little bit. She really has been through a lot and done a lot of things. And her journey, I think the reason why I appreciate season six as much as I do is because just rewatching season one and two while watching season six really showed me how much Ruby has grown. And I think that she really is the heart of the show. So I think a lot of what I'll have to say about season six is really just my appreciation for the titular character of the show.
What about you, Michelle? I know we had found out just in passing conversation that we were literally like two episodes away from each other
really
while we were watching.
Weird. You were at my house and you're like, oh yeah, I got to go home and watch a couple episodes of something.
This
like,
anime show I'm watching.
What are you watching? And you're like, oh, the show Ruby. I'm like, wait. Really? What episode are you on? I think we were both like towards like in the middle of season five. Or yeah. I think you were like a little bit into it. I had just started.
You just started
five.
I was like three or four episodes in.
So, and then I think I finished watching it.
Is there a particular reason you picked up the show, or just looking liked at something
it.
To kill
it
time?
It was the same thing where it was like it was nice to be able to just watch an episode here and there. And like you were saying, seasons one and two are kind of light, but then you're hooked. And you can't.
Then you're
you can't
in and you
stop.
Care about the characters.
And now you're paying your friend James on Venmo to get access to his Rooster Teeth private account so you don't have to watch ads.
Oh, and yeah. Oh, my gosh. I remember when James found out I was into Ruby, I think, from reading my post, because then he comes up to me at a party. I don't even live in New Jersey at this point. We're at our friend Danny's masquerade
party. I've actually kidnapped her from whatever state she comes from.
No. Yeah, yeah, okay. No. So James walks up to me. He's like, so I know you're really into anime and into Ruby, so during this masquerade party, James and I then realized, and I was like, oh my god, you like Ruby too? Let's talk about all our favorite characters. And that's why we went to see the Ruby season 6 premiere together, because we were like, okay, we are trash. And we are Ruby trash, and that is okay. That is all right.
I guess let's just jump right into it then. Obviously, I hope at this point you're not listening if you're not into Ruby in some way, because this is all going to be really out of context. If you haven't watched Ruby and you've been listening to this podcast and this sounds like something interesting to you, go watch 6 seasons and then come back.
But don't worry, the episodes are really short.
Yeah. Until you get to like season 4.
We said it. The max is like 20 something minutes. So we'll wait. We'll,
yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, we'll wait.
We're patient.
There's a pause button.
Cool, good. Yeah. Everybody's back. They watched, they caught up with everything.
Like an 87 episodes.
So season 6. I think this is the first time I watched Ruby, because I binged the rest of it.
Yeah.
So this is the first time, maybe I think the finale of the last season, I had to wait for like an episode or two to come out. But I think this is the first time I've ever watched Ruby, as it's coming out week to week. I don't know if that helped. I liked this season, but it felt uneven to me.
A little bit, yeah. And I think part of it is that I'm not just watching the whole season at once, where I have to, like, since there's a whole week and the episodes are so short, I just have to think, oh, wait, what happened last week? That is, like, you don't spend a lot of time watching the episode that you just, sometimes the information that's given during it doesn't really stick.
Yeah. Well, let's start out positive. Let's start by talking about what we really liked this season.
Well, like, the lore.
Oh my gosh.
Great.
Thank
like,
God.
With like, Salem, I freaking love that. So, and it's definitely, it's all about like the whole human condition and the fear of death.
There's so many
themes that are running through it that I did not think that this is what they were going with at all.
I think that when Monty Ohm imagined the series, I know that a lot of the story that's left over is stuff that he wrote.
Yeah.
But I feel like finally this is the season where they were able to capture what was imagined and make something substantial from it. They were able to actually capture like the mystical nature of the world.
Yeah.
Because without Monty, they don't have as many fight scenes. And so really what's happened is that we've had to be carried by a story that wasn't as strong. And now I feel like in season 6, like the lore and the stories and the characters are just so vibrant and they're actually brought to life. This is definitely my favorite post-Monty season.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we definitely capture some of that Ruby spark that made us all love the show in the first place.
Yeah, I think I would definitely agree. The season really comes out the gate with all that, right? So I think I was really worried that it would take us a long... Like, I knew we would have to get some explanation, being that the main focus of this season was, like, how are we going to stop Salem? That we'd have to get some explanation of her and what her relationship was to Ozpin and all that sort of stuff. But, I mean, it was literally the third episode in, and we're deep into this massive flashback with all the, you know, obviously he's named Oz, so I loved all the Wizard of Oz imagery and all of the, you know, all of the kind of the ancient Chinese yin and yang they got going on, and you know, the god of darkness and the god of light, and they gave an explanation for what happened to the moon. They really just dived into kind of answering a lot of questions that everybody knew was kind of like on the minds of Ruby fans, you know, without, I think, going too crazy. You know what I mean? I don't think I have a fundamentally different understanding of these characters, right? Like, I didn't have like a humongous revelation from like who Ozpin is. Like, obviously, like, I know that I get the idea that he's kind of moved bodies and things like that because he's in Oscar. And I, you know, obviously I knew Salem was some sort of ancient evil, but I think I relate to their struggles a bit more. I think,
well, yeah, because it gives you that backstory of she wasn't born evil.
Right.
Or anything. It was, she made really poor choices.
She made some really cunningly poor choices.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
So, but the thing is, people are tricky like that. So, like, I sympathize with her over the fact that she lived a whole life trapped in a castle and was finally rescued by some man, and she felt like life cheated her by taking him from her so quickly. So, who wouldn't try and get them back? You know, you think about something like that, that I feel like that's something I would be like, okay, yeah, I'll go freaking lie to the god of death.
Like, just so we know, do not bring Michelle into any negotiation with the god.
Do not do that. Do not bring her to any fiddle contests.
No fiddle contests.
Do not bring her down to Georgia.
But still, like, if you're put in that situation, what would you do? Yeah, you want to say you would do what's moral, but inherently humans tend to be selfish.
Yeah.
So, and I think that, I don't know if I would agree that what they did to her is really fair, but that's playing with the hands of the gods.
Yeah.
So it's like very, you know, Greek mythology too, where it's like, you did one tiny little thing wrong, now you're cursed forever.
That does feel very Greek mythology, yes, of them to do that. And I mean, when I was watching it, like, I think in a sense, I felt like, at first when I was watching, I did feel like, oh my god, every mystery in this show is just revealed to us now. What's left? And then by the end of the season, I'm like, wait, there's so much we don't know. There's so much stuff we don't know.
The world, thankfully, the world of Ruby feels so expansive. The idea of all the different countries and all the different schools and all of that, there's nothing like, you know, there's still obviously many places where this show could go, but now I think the show moves forward with more background. I have one particular question that I don't know if I misunderstood or I'm not sure what happened or if I'm thinking about this the wrong way. So there's one thing in the backstory that I'm really questioning. They have four daughters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Did they die? And are they the maidens? Because they had powers, but I definitely feel like they insinuate that they died with the, like, the
mourning
destroyed,
and, yeah,
the mourning and the destroyed toy. You know, I think that
the, like, I've been thinking about that the whole season too, and I think that it was personally left that way on purpose, because if they answer those questions, then we have to answer all the questions about the maidens. And even though, you know, we had that amazing season 5 ending, which was like, Vernal's not the spring maiden, I am. Like, you know, we have this season, and we haven't actually talked about the next maiden. We haven't talked about any of that. And I think they kind of pulled the wool over our eyes on purpose. They're like, oh no, we can't reveal the entire maiden backstory. I feel like, in a sense, maybe, I feel like they're going to go one of two ways. Either the children lived and had children, or when they died, like, their powers passed on.
Or Ozpin was able to harness them in some way. Because the original story of the maidens is obviously that, you know, these maidens found this, you know, grumpy old wizard,
yes,
who didn't want to do anything, which is obviously Ozpin, yes, right? And after everything Ozpin had been through and living for such a long time, it's easy to see how he could get to that point where he's like, well, F it. I don't care anymore. Like, you know, nobody's, if those gods come back, humanity's a lost cause anyway, who cares? You know, and to see his faith restored, he then gave them the power of his children. But I guess it's kind of a neat way to say that, like, obviously Ruby's got more mysteries that it can answer.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's really important, I think, that we don't know the answer to that question yet, because it shows that the writers are kind of coming into their own a little bit and cleverly showing us that no longer are we in the days of like, oh, nope, can't know any of the secrets. Ozpin's keeping it all secret. Crow's keeping it all secret. Now the protagonists of Ruby kind of know in a lot of ways.
I wonder if the four protagonists of Ruby will one day be in the
movie. Oh my gosh.
Shocking.
Oh my gosh, what are you talking about?
And it's not like their colors are...
whisper, it doesn't come up on the mic.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Let's whisper loudly. Yeah, let's whisper loudly. I wonder if the four characters from Ruby are going to be the new maidens.
Welcome, everyone. This is my Ruby ASMR video.
You know what? Google that. I bet that exists.
So let's move then on, I think, to the next big plot line, which is the... I guess, what was that town called? So they're in this sleepy town, and they're set on by this depression.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yes. I forget the name of the town, but it's this abandoned farm, like, small town settlement. And we are approaching it. They're like, okay, we need a place to rest. I'm so tired. Like, all the characters are suddenly so fatigued when they get there.
And not even just fatigued. They're, like, melancholy and they're, apathy.
Well, I mean, it's... clear, like, obviously going... So this is the part of the season that I think dragged and had a problem for me when not watching it back to back to back to back. I can see if I had watched it back to back to back to back that it might have felt different. But it's weird because, like... So, you know, and maybe this was intentional, but I don't know if it plays so well. When they go into the town, like, I feel like it makes sense that they're apathetic, right? They have just been told by Jin, the genie in the magic lamp that they have...
Well, it's really a relic. It's not a magic lamp.
Really, guys.
It's not a magic lamp.
If you're listening to this cold, I apologize.
Frank's never going to let us do this again. What is this crap?
So they're told, you know, there's no way, not defeated, but there's no way that Salem can be killed. She is unkillable.
Well, it was actually, how do I stop Salem? And you can't.
You can't. You can't stop Salem. And everybody's kind of like, well, why are we doing this, right? You know, that has been kind of the driving force since season 3 through season 6 we got to stop the big bad.
Everyone kind of turns against Ozpin. Ozpin takes a backseat in Oscar. So now it's just Oscar's like, what?
Oh, sorry, I'm just 14.
I'm my own person. I'm a farmhand.
What is this? So I think that this is a really good place to draw a difference between us, because I started watching Ruby episode by episode in season 4. And that is a season that drags if you have to watch it episode by episode. So in comparison, I feel like season 6 moves so much faster. Though I'd say the largest moment for me in season 6 that allowed me to really appreciate those episodes was the fact that I actually was focused a lot on Crow, because, you know, it's been a long time coming that he's obviously an alcoholic. He's got some issues, but so far we've seen him as cool Uncle Crow doing his cool thing, having a drink. What's wrong with him? And the apathy actually made his alcoholism very bad. Yeah. And even after he left that town, he still struggled a lot with his alcoholism.
But they didn't leave it, right? So... it's cool, like you said, like when they left that town, the alcoholism, which had been revealed to us as like, this is a problem, didn't go away.
Yes.
It remained a problem once we left the town. And yeah, that is really sweet.
And that I think that was one of the reasons why I was able to enjoy that arc, because I was focusing on the characters. And I said this before, and I really feel this is the case. Without Monty Ohm, a lot of what Ruby is now is focusing on the characters and the story.
Well, it's tough. Obviously, when you lose, you know, such a driving force behind your show, the people who are left to kind of pick up the pieces, you know, they're going to honor what he was doing as much as possible, but they're going to have to try to find their own show in Ruby, right? What is the show that they want to make, and what are their ideas? You know, and it was clear that obviously in season 4, they had to just kind of figure it out without him, right? But then, yeah, you know, I think with the ending of season 5 being really nice,
yes,
and really well put together, and then I think overall season 6 having a lot of positives to it, you know, I think they're really finding that. What I liked about the whole Crow and the alcoholism arc is that's something that generally isn't addressed in anime, mm-hmm, which is cool. They generally let the drunk uncle character just remain the funny drunk uncle character. So it's cool that they turn that on its head. Michelle, I don't know what your thoughts were on this arc.
The drunk uncle arc?
Well, the apathy town.
Oh, I wasn't surprised by it. I kind of had that sense that something was going on there. And we're doing spoilers. Spoilers is fine.
Yeah,
what exactly was the leader of the town left to go find...
some Grimm.
It was Grimm that he locked down in the cellar.
They're called the Apathy.
The Apathy Grimm. So he found them to kind of make all of his townspeople compliant?
Yeah, so basically...
Because people were upset or something. People were worried.
Yeah, so the more anxious you get, the more Grimm get attracted to you. And so what he was like is, okay, guys,
let's get these special Grimm, our anti-anxiety Grimm, and lock them in the basement under our homes.
And what happened is that he only got two of them. Mm-hmm. But the thing is they made him so apathetic that instead of just sealing up the place where the Grimm was immediately, he was so apathetic he went to bed. And in the night, the rest of the Grimm followed them home. And so they all died in their beds because they were too apathetic to care.
So because that's like when our Ruby characters start finding like, all the houses are the same. Everyone's died. And I'm like, I guess there was a gas leak. Something's going on here. It was so strange that then it just clicked. It made sense. That's why, there's the point that at the end of the episode where Ruby's like, it doesn't matter. Let's just drop the relic. We don't need this. And she drops it down the well. But then immediately she's like, crap, like, no. And they go down there, and that's when they find the Grimm down there, right?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to piece my memory back together about this.
I think what bothers me so much about this arc is I really wanted to like it. Like, when you find out that story and, like, the whole thing, I'm like, man, this is something, like, I would have loved, right? Like, I don't know if
it was the, it was done as well as it could have been.
Yeah.
Because then there's, like, a scene in between where it's like, I found B!
They did do that.
Yeah.
Wasn't that Ruby who did that?
That was Ruby.
Yeah.
I just feel like as a whole, the whole idea, I would have liked it. And, I almost wish we got like a flashback to it or something. We just saw it illustrated in a different way. I, unlike you, Michelle, I did not figure out what was going on. Right. I was like, why are you like, this is. Something should have clicked.
I knew something was off. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, but I guess for me, something never really clicked. I just thought the characters were acting like super apathetic and tired about it. And it really didn't click till the end, but it's like a 4-episode arc or something. So it just feels...
Was it really that many episodes?
Yeah, so okay. over an entire month of watching, it just felt like such a slog.
See, I lagged a little bit where I'd have a couple weeks where I'd be like, ooh, there's like 3 episodes I can watch. Oops.
But... The arc did end with returning to a plot point that we haven't had since season 3, which I'm really excited about going into.
The silver eyes.
Exactly. And then immediately we get, like, I think one of the best fight scenes this season, it may be entirely in Ruby, when we get to see our old lady friend, who we learn is the Grim Reaper. a character we've never known of before, and I would normally be mad that they're just like, we're going to side introduce this character that's always been really important and crazy in the lore. And then I saw that fight, and I'm like, never mind, yeah, that's fine.
It's like, yeah, when we saw the fight that showed us just how fearsome Silver-Eyed Warriors, now, I'm really into Ruby, so I don't know if any of you listen to the music. But in the music...
big music fan.
Okay, so have you heard Red Like Roses? Have you heard the sequel, Red Like Roses 2?
Yes.
Okay, so I really felt like this moment helped me understand Summer Rose better. Because, and I mean, Summer gets a little bit of airtime in the end of season 6. And I feel like understanding Summer is really important to understanding Ruby. Because it's always been kind of understood by all the teachers and everyone involved that Ruby's doing everything for the right reasons. She has the best intentions. Like, even when you go back to season 2, the professor asks everybody except Ruby, like, why are you doing this? And when we see the Grim Reaper, like, just take down all those Grimm, you just realize, like, wow, that's why Summer still had to fight, because she was probably the only one capable of defending so many places from Grimm. And seeing this amazing fight scene, I was like, wow, is that Monty Ohm? Like, and actually it turns out that they've hired somebody who, like, admired Monty Ohm a lot. And as an art buff, they have really started to nail in those 2D special effects. Like, a lot of the visual effects this season are in 2D, and it really shone in this episode and in some of the later fight scenes in this season. But I just loved watching the Grim Reaper fight, but it was so brutal to watch her lose her eyesight and the way she screamed. That acting was intense.
I think you said everything I was going to say. That was really great. I just super impressed by that fight scene. It was really cool to, you know, get some background on this character that we meet on the train in the beginning.
I was going
to
say, what are the chances that the Grim Reaper's just on the same train that you know that's going to derail?
It's anime. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, at the very least, like, she followed them on purpose. Yeah. So, like, she at least from the train station was following them on purpose. Because she, you see her, like, looking back at Ruby like, that chick has silver eyes. Oh, crap. And so... Because otherwise, you're like, why is this old lady here and why do I care?
So from there, we go on into, where's the town?
Oh, man, I don't remember the name of the town. Is it Argus? Or no, that's where they're headed.
They're headed to Argus.
Yeah, they're headed to Argus.
I can't, I'm bad. I need to draw maps.
Hang on.
So yeah.
The Argus-occupied place.
Yeah.
Yeah, where,
John's sister lives in the town on the edge, which is where they've been headed.
Oh my god, gay characters, yay.
Yay.
Yeah, so mixed race gay characters, yay.
Yeah, so, and also they just have children. Like, it's just an undisputed thing. They have a child.
They just have a child.
That's just it. Like, yeah. You know, no, like, I think that's kind of what I like about representation. In Ruby, like, they just decided, no, these characters are together, and they have children, and we're not going to shove it.
It's just kind of like The Sims. Like, these people are dating.
Yeah, exactly. Like, here you go. They're together.
No, Argus is the name of the town. Atlas is where they're going.
Okay. All right. So it's...
Sorry. Representation. Yay.
Yay. Yes. Representation is good. But Argus is this town where John's sister lives. And if you've been watching Ruby up until this point, John has, like, noted, like, yeah, I have a ton of sisters and they're all great. And so we finally meet one of them.
And she is great.
And she is fantastic. But it's just in time for all of the characters to have to turn around and say, hey, Nora, Ren, John, just so you know, there's no way to, like, stop Salem from what she's doing.
But then it's cool because we get a little bit of them kind of getting, you
they
know.
They kind of bump up the motivation.
Yeah.
Well, because everyone's at this point is like, oh, well, like, we're screwed. We can't do anything. And then John comes with the crazy idea. Let's steal a plane.
Yeah. Okay. I think they get their moment to kind of grieve and then deal with it and then move on. But obviously, like, one, they have to do it faster because we're closer to the end of season. But two, you know, they're able to pump up the other characters, like you said.
Also, they don't have, you know, magical grieving apathy things to deal with. Correct. While they're dealing with it. And then they run into, you know, they get to see a beautiful statue of Pyrrha. Hear more about Pyrrha. And then,
oh my gosh, and I was almost crying.
And then we run into Pyrrha's, so like, mother, sister, I'm not sure.
Relative.
Yeah, a relative of Pyrrha's who, like, and it was, I definitely cried. That was a moment when I'm like, wow, Rooster Teeth really cared about Pyrrha and they're not just erasing it. Like, I thought after season four, we'd basically never hear about
it. She's always in the show because she's Jean's armor now.
Yeah. And they definitely don't sidetrack mentioning her. Right.
There are even episodes in the beginning of, I think, season six where Jean was still feeling grief and guilt.
I think it's important that they kind of make it a point to say that, look, we didn't
kill her for no reason.
Yeah. It's important. Sometimes it is important in storytelling for characters to die. It does give give characters agency, but we, you know, they wanted to make sure that it's like, look, we didn't kill this obviously sentient, loving character that we cared about, you know, only to give John agency in a story. Like, she is given the entire world in which Ruby exists in, and the fall of Beacon and that whole thing has changed the makeup of the whole realm of Ruby. And that's, you know, that's, I mean, you can't get any more agency than that.
Absolutely. But what happens immediately after that is just several episodes of awesome fights, like amazing fights. I loved the end of season six. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but just watching fight.
Oh,
after
I was
fight,
like anxious the whole time. I was like, oh, this better work.
I think the end of season six for me is like perfect Ruby, right? It's the perfect balance of great fight scenes, of humor, of heart, of action, and of seriousness. Right? Everything in it just kind of comes in at exactly the right level. And it's the same sort of great stuff that we had going on in the season five finale. Right? I just loved it. I thought it was all just so well balanced and so good. And like you said, I think it really pulls Ruby back in as like the heart of the show and be like, you know, like Ruby's not just this annoying character. Like, there's a reason why like Ruby is so hopeful. you know, it, that hope matters.
She's lost so much. And even as the seasons go on, you know, it's her hope that she finds within her that saves people. And I think definitely what started the end of the season was when she started by saying, "No, Crow, you're being an alcoholic. You're treating us like crap and you're scared. We're the people who are going to make this happen, and you can join us or you can't." And that was just like this first step into the next several episodes. But, you know, thinking on it, I think the one thing I would say that is a problem is I feel like Adam returning kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I didn't really, I kind of thought we
not
were...
that it was a bad fight. Not all.
No, I...
no, it was a good fight.
The fight with Adam was amazing. I'm totally Blake Yang here. So like
Bumblebee shipper aboard.
Yeah. But I do, that's my thing. Like, I feel like Adam was just so like puppy between his legs at the end of last season. And we got like, maybe we got one like between season sort of thing.
The promo.
Where we saw like Adam's kind of progression to where he was like sitting angry on that throne of basically his destroyed empire. But yeah, I totally agree. Like,
maybe what would have helped is, first off, Cinder and Neo have been showing up this whole season, and I thought that meant they were going to show up for the finale. But what it really meant is they're setting up for next season.
Yeah.
Maybe it would have helped if instead of having a very slow arc with you know, the apathy, we had some watching out, like Adam literally tracking everybody. That would have been a good thing to see.
Exactly. I want to know, I wanted to, I'm happy to see Adam gone. I think, you know, I think at the end of last season, it was very clear that he outlived kind of his effect on the series. I even thought that they kind of like dialed Yang back a little bit to give her a little bit extra PTSD of losing her hand, something that they really didn't address in season 5 to make the fight impact more, the fight more impactful for season 6. And that's all great, but I think I needed a little bit of Adam's motivation there. You know what I mean? Not a ton, just like, you know, it, even if it had just been like an episode or a small snippet of like, oh, he's been obsessed with them since they left. He's been watching them this whole time. He's just been waiting for his moment. You know, he says it, right? But sometimes, you know, show don't tell.
Yeah, I think that's probably my only real problem, because I enjoyed pretty much everything this season, even the apathy. But definitely that moment of, I'm glad you're here, Adam. I do want to see them kick your butt. But also, maybe you could have shown up a little bit more throughout the season. Like, maybe, you know. But ultimately, like, I think seeing his scar and seeing what he looked like was really powerful. Like,
the scar was pretty great.
Yeah, like the fact that he was branded on his eye, like, that's where his bitterness comes from.
Well, yeah, you absolutely understand. Like, it's not just he was treated like an animal, he was treated like cattle, right? Oh. And, like, we even when we, you know, because sometimes it's hard because we associate animals with lots of different things, like pets and things we love. We generally associate cattle with food, right? And the way we think of cattle, we think of, like, factory farming and, like, all of this, like, terrible thing. So it just instantly, just very recognizably, you know, frames Adam as this thing. He was, you know, at some point he was somebody's thing. And that's, like...
Hard. It hits hard.
That's devastating.
But, I mean, watching his fight was fantastic because you can see how scared both the characters fighting him are. And finally, like, Blake has to see Yang as somebody to fight with. And Yang has to forgive Blake for the fact that she didn't do that. And I think that was really important for their characters because they are now, they've, like, mended that bond that was broken, while also killing someone visibly on screen, which we haven't seen since Pyrrha.
Yeah, well, and I mean, even in a different way than Pyrrha, there was... No, well, yeah, Pyrrha died normally. Never mind. Take that back.
I was actually kind of surprised that they killed him.
Yeah.
So because thinking of
Protagonist Kun, like, it's hard to imagine them killing somebody, but that's what shocked me. I was like, whoa, dang.
But I feel like we moved on
from
that
like
story.
I feel like it was kind of, it was his time to go.
Yeah.
I was just shocked that them, you know, they wouldn't do the whole prisoner thing or whatever rather than death.
I'm excited. You know, something I didn't know? I didn't know Neo was mute.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I forgot
idea.
About Neo, and I was just reading the wiki page about her.
Yeah, so, no idea.
She was such a background character for a bit.
She was with Hat Guy, whose name I also don't remember.
Roman.
Well, yeah. I mean, she was important in that she almost killed Yang.
Yeah.
Yes. But I mean, like, I guess...
But other than that, yes.
I didn't notice that she didn't speak, and I didn't, like, think that there was a reason she didn't speak, other than she was, like, a season... or she was just like a season one and two character, and we only have so many voice actors.
I can't think of it. When Cinder and her both show up, and they have the fight scene in the bar, and there's the lady.
Oh, you mean like the town tip person who's like, I've never made twice my bounty on one.
I don't know, but I liked her. I hope we come back to her.
She was really good. Definitely, I love that immediately. She was like, hi there. Oh my God, who wants to know about her? Because we are going to sell her out.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely appreciated that character. Yeah. I think
that was some good comic relief.
I feel almost like it definitely... We got a lot of the buildup that we needed for Neo and Cinder to do really cool stuff next season. And and even Emerald and Mercury. Yeah. Like, is it Mercury? Yeah.
Yeah, Mercury.
Yeah, Mercury.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Emerald and Mercury.
Scorpion dude whose tail got cut off.
Yeah, Tyrion. Yeah. Voiced by Josh Greeley.
I think it was difficult to see our traditional antagonists take a big back seat this season to a lot of world building and stuff like that. It feels like it slows the pace. But obviously it's important because it's going to set up big stuff for the next season.
I do say I admire them because I'm so used to the Ruby formula of, okay, you see all the villains that are playing a part this season and then they're going to do something at the end of the season. Then to see them like, oh no, they're not just going straight into a fight with these guys. They're really preparing for a big, like, Cinder means business. She knows if she fails against Ruby one more time, then she's done.
I mean, the next confrontation has to be the end of Cinder. So, well, let's talk really briefly before we end this, because we've been talking about it for a while. Let's talk what we're looking forward to for season 7, which, I mean, we've got like a whole year, right?
Yeah.
Probably.
Oh, gosh, really?
I just have to say that now that I looked at the picture of Roman, now I definitely remember Neo. I needed that, like, visual image to jog my memory. I hope we just see more of Ruby figuring out her powers with the Silver Eyes, which obviously it's a plot line. Yeah, because they cut to her a few times, right?
Yeah, or but this was the first time we actually saw her face in a model. Like, we've never
seen her. That's her mother, right?
Yes.
We're talking about her mother?
Yes. I love that.
Her name is Summer.
Summer Rose.
Come on.
Yeah, okay. Somebody's going to get the maiden power.
I don't know who's going to get it.
Well, so. Come on. We need this. I'm excited we're going back to Atlas.
Atlas is so cool.
We're talking about the songs. My favorite songs on the Ruby soundtracks are Mirror Mirror.
Oh, absolutely.
Which are Weiss's songs. And Mirror Mirror, like, perfectly mimics, particularly the sequel song, perfectly mimics her struggle in season 5. And I'm excited to have her, because she ran away from that struggle by going to find everyone else, which was good. But if she's going back to Atlas, they're going to have to confront.
Yeah, they're going to have to
her
deal
with... snooty family.
Yes. Yeah, they're going to have to deal with the Schnee problem.
Yes.
The Schnee problem.
But yeah, and I really like... I really enjoy Weiss. So, and I've enjoyed her character evolution over the past couple of seasons, so I'm excited to see that.
Yeah. So Weiss is definitely the melted ice queen at this point.
Yeah.
So I'd say I have a lot of excitement for the next season because I really think it's going to set the pace for, like, supposedly there's supposed to be like over 10 seasons of Ruby, maybe even more. So that means
they're going to keep this cat cow going as long as they can. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
So all right, I'll give you $6 next year.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they make all their money. Have you seen like the cons?
Yeah.
Ruby has like just merch up the wazoo. Yeah.
Yes, it does. And I mean, I'm wearing,
I'm spending yesterday all my money on at PAX.
Oh, are you going to PAX?
I believe so. I have room booked and I have tickets.
So,
all right. Yeah, I'll see you there.
So, for me, I'm really excited to see, I want to know, like, I want Ruby to be able to fight Cinder at her truest capability, because at the end of the day, Cinder has sold her humanity, and Ruby, once she knows how to use her powers, will be able to take advantage of that. So if Ruby masters her powers next season, or we wait longer, Cinder's just going to get weaker and weaker to her. So I think next season is the perfect time for them to have an even confrontation.
Yeah.
Because if we give Ruby 2 or 3 more seasons, she's going to master it and be able to just blink Cinder out of existence like Ash.
And Ruby hasn't had like a great fight scene in a while. You know what I mean? Like, we really gave it obviously to Yang and Blake this season, and Yang got it real good last season. So I feel like, you know, we got to get... some Ruby going.
It was amazing to see her channel her power, and how it's funny because Pyrrha's death was the first time she used her powers, but now it's something that causes her such pain that she can't use them when she thinks of Pyrrha's death.
Yeah.
So you definitely see the Silver Eyes power, which they even told us is related to the God of Light. calling back to it, it can defeat the god of darkness because it's actually a power from the god of light. And that's why Salem has been basically sending out assassins to kill every silver-eyed maiden. So Ruby stands to threaten Salem the most and really stands to struggle against this tide more and more. And even as she grows into a more serious and mature character, I'm just excited to see her definitely catapult into the next season. And because you know what? Never has it been that her faith has gone unrewarded. Never has her struggle really broken her, because every time she loses something, she comes back more powerful. And I'm also excited to see Oscar do things more, because he's actually started to come into his own.
Oscar, yeah. Do things. No, I'm kidding.
Yes. But he, right now, he's in this precarious position where we don't know if he's going to disappear or Ozpin is. And that's
a fine line that they've been walking. So, because it seems like whatever character, Ozpin was just Ozpin before.
Yes.
And we didn't know who that.
We don't know who was him before.
Who was he?
Yeah,
one knows where he just absorbed that whole person, where it's like, is Oscar eventually going to lose his whole identity to just Ozpin?
Well, I think ideally, you know, Ozpin is growing and changing during this process, and maybe it'll be a true assimilation, right? Yeah. We have that moment at the end there when instead of, you know, Ozpin taking over Oscar to land the plane, he was like, let me guide you.
Yes.
Right. And that's, you know, there's obviously a lot there about consent and about, you know, the relationship in which Ozpin as a mentor is going to have with Oscar. And there's just so much stuff they can explore with that and have like a really deep, deep thought process on. So hopefully they go there.
Yeah, I'm super excited for that. And I love Weiss. She's my favorite. And I love Winter. So I'm excited to see Winter return.
I hope we get Winter back. Yeah.
She has to be, because she's an Atlas. All of the characters that we focused on, I think.
And the Commander. I like the Commander,
yes,
too.
Yes, I do. Iron something.
Iron Sides.
Iron.
That's probably not his name.
Something Iron. But I'm really excited.
Ironwood. It's Commander Ironwood.
Ironwood, yeah. I was like, I want to say Iron Fist, but I know that's a terrible Marvel show, so they got canceled. So.
And Ironsides was a real general, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right? So, I'm super excited for those things. I'm really excited to see some really cool winter fight scenes, winter, like, situations, winter scenes, winter backgrounds. Like, I'm just want to see, like, the aesthetic of how they're going to show us Atlas, because it's this beautiful crystalline city up top, and then there's, like, a slum look, or, you know, just an industrial district down below. And I'm super excited for
some class issues.
Oh, yeah, I'm pretty sure Atlas could write the book on class issues. And overall, I'm glad that it comes every October every year, so we won't have to wait a full year. We'll just have to wait like 8 months.
Yeah, it's not as bad.
So honestly, I'm just excited for it. I've grown to just really love the series and where they're taking it, and I'm excited for the art direction, because they're just finding their own in the show. So unlike most shows where I would say the first few seasons really defines it and makes it what it is and like it just decays, I'd say Ruby is only getting better and better from where it's been. I'd say, you know, it found its peak in season 3 and kind of dipped, and now it's coming up to a different peak. It's a different show now, but it's a good show that I really like.
Also. Woo. All right.
One last thing.
Okay.
Bring my man back over here. Just literally, Renora is my favorite thing ever. Like, bring back my man. Like, what an amazing character Nora is.
I hope we see more of them. And that's my last point I was going to make, is I hope we see more screen time of Nora and Ren.
Oh my gosh.
So, because we got like that, like, it was kind of the backstory of them, the like little bit.
In season four, how they
ended up together. It was so cute and it was so touching, and it's just, I want to know more about that. I want to know more about them.
I mean,
and John is just awkwardly there, like,
yeah. So
poor John, always fifth wheeling,
the third or fifth or seventh. Ninth
I mean, in the
wheel.
season 5 interview before the series, they basically confirmed that Renora is a thing now.
Yeah,
and so I'm like, good. Yes. So she calling her calling him. My man! I'm like, yes. My time has come. So that's really all I have to say about Ruby, but I'm super excited, and I'm, for the most part, I think season 6 was just a massive step forward in continuity and quality for the show.
All right, well.
I'm going to say my overall, I liked it a lot. I think there were some, I think this season took a dip in the middle there, pacing-wise, and I think pacing's really important, and something like other than maybe season four. I think Ruby generally does really well. but yeah, you know, I'm certainly, I haven't given up yet. I'll tell you that much. What about you, Michelle?
Oh, and overall? Say, we'll see y'all this time next year for season seven.
Maybe we talk a little more, a little more in detail of it as the series goes on next year. Now that we've branded
TV Talk.
I was about to say TV Talks, time.
Just so that you can learn more about your regular everyday television show.
We actually had a brand called TV Party, and I'm sure Frank's going to be like, we already had a brand.
When you got to brand it, this is what we do.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
Let's brainstorm better names for ourselves.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.